This is Fresh Air. Today we're continuing our discussion about violence in the media. In this half hour, we'll talk with filmmakers who became controversial because of the violence in their work. Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer, is a movie loosely based on the life of serial killer Henry Lee Lucas. The film was bold, realistic, and in some scenes, graphic. It ended up on many critics' 10 best lists. My guests are the film's director, John McNaughton, and producer, Steve Jones, who also collaborated on Mad Dog and Glory, which starred Robert De Niro and Bill Murray. It's possible that the TV industry will soon have a rating system for violence, similar to the rating system that movies have now. Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer, was given an X by the Motion Picture Association of America. Usually, when a film is rated X, the director is given the chance to edit out the problem areas. But McNaughton says that's not what happened with Henry.
Our film was probably the only case where they didn't give us an option to say, this scene, they did basically said the overall moral tone of this film is just, you know, wrong. They didn't say wrong, but they said the problem is the overall moral tone. We have no idea how you could change this film. There is no way to change this film.
What did that mean to you, that the film had a disturbing moral tone?
That was actually a source of pride.
Oh, right. I mean, that was the point, you know? So.
The point was that you were making a movie about somebody who was disturbing morally. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I think their point was that we didn't provide a moral point of view for the audience. You know, we didn't take them through a sort of, this is right and this is, we just sort of presented a picture of these people sort of for perhaps 2 weeks without moralizing and letting, you know, sort of throwing it into the audience's lap and saying, what are your moral, you know, I mean, feel around inside and see what you can come up with. What do you feel about this situation? Rather than say, okay, you know, we didn't introduce the police. They weren't, Henry was not captured at the end. He was still assumed that he was out there. And it was like, now think about all this stuff. And there's people like this out there. It was to provoke and not to preach our particular morality on the subject.
We also had suggestions from, I think it was from British press, that in Britain the biggest problem they had was with Henry and Otis watching the a video replay of the crime they'd committed, the home invasion.
Because they videotape the crime themselves, and then they play it back later.
Exactly. They videotape a home invasion, and then they sit down and watch it later on as entertainment. And apparently the British censors felt that we were including the audience in that voyeurism, which is actually true. And they had a very big problem with that.
Yeah, what were you trying to say with that scene?
Trying to implicate both ourselves as filmmakers and the audience into the idea. You know, the scene was sort of set up in a tricky way where you see this family being killed and you see it through the video viewfinder. So you make the assumption you're seeing it as it's happening. But at the end of the scene, you realize that the camera, the movie camera, has been trained on the TV screen in their living room, and what you're watching is not the act in progress, but the video replay back home while they're sitting on the couch, you know, and it's the idea of being entertained by violence.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time the camera pulls back and you realize you're not seeing as it occurs, but you're sitting sort of visually made to feel as if you're sitting on the couch with Henry and Otis watching along with them this, you know, horrendous slaughter of a family. And I think that's the key moment in the film where you sort of have to turn your gaze inside yourself, and if there's a time for moralizing, I think certainly that's it. Moral exploration of your own self, if you will.
Well, you haven't made another movie like Henry, right? I mean, the other movie you made that I've seen is Mad Dog and Glory, which is a wonderful offbeat comedy.
But even that has its moment of incredible violence, but...
Yeah, I mean, the beginning of the film is in black
right.
and white, and it's a scary, violent scene. And then the whole tone changes as soon as that scene is over. It's like an homage to your first film, almost.
But I think in some ways even that is another example. And by then I don't want to say we didn't know what we were doing when we made Henry, but in Henry we were just literally trying to get a movie made. When we made Mad Dog, we sort of considered the idea of responsible violence, and rather than glorify it or glamorize it, we tried to make it as realistic as possible so that you immediately knew what kind of a world these people were living in. And we didn't have to ever refer to it again because You know, we set it up at the very beginning of the picture.
And also, in order when we were researching the picture, Mad Dog and Glory, because De Niro plays what's known as a crime scenes cop. Myself and Steve and, of course, Richard Price, who sort of initiated the whole idea and spent time with the New York police and De Niro, would spend time with these crime scenes cops in both New York and Chicago. And, you know, they just only respond to homicide and go out and document the evidence, take photographs and stuff. So we would actually, you know, spend evenings in their offices and wait for the phone to ring, which meant someone was murdered, and go out to these crime scenes and see the actual, you know, victims and see how the crimes were investigated and work with the people who did the work and then see their books because they photograph all the homicides. You see, and this sort of endless variation of you know, methods people use to slaughter each other that happens. You know, I don't know I don't know what the average is. In New York, I remember one statistic in the last 7 years, there were 2 days without homicide. So, you know, supposedly the arts are supposed to be, a mirror to reflect the society. I mean, violence is so prevalent, it's hard to avoid the subject.
But, you know, without comparing our own work to high art, there are paintings through history that are insanely violent. I mean, paintings in the Louvre of, you know, all the saints being
Goya, Bruegel, Bosch.
All those fellows, you know, they show these horrific scenes of people being burned and shot full of arrows and having their hearts ripped out or their heads chopped off. And that's something that is prevalent throughout history. It's one of it's part of art form, just as much as something of non-violent things and things that make you feel whatever emotion, love or beauty or hope. There's also despair and fear and you know, the revulsion to violence. Each of those is a color of the palette of an artist, and I think it would be hard to say, well, these particular emotions or events are unacceptable, whereas these others are, and you can portray them all you like, we'll leave you alone. I think it sort of reduces the emotional content of art to chop the dark colors out.
My guests are the director and producer of Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer, John McNaughton, and Steve Jones. We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air. Back with the makers of Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer. There's some pressure, I believe, on the television industry now to put out more programs with positive messages. Anti-violence messages, messages against date rape, messages for designated drivers, and so on. I wonder if you have any concerns. I mean, Janet Reno has said that she hopes one day public service announcements will become virtually superfluous because the television programs themselves will have taken on the responsibility for those messages. I wonder if that raises any concerns to you, and if you're worried about the place that the dark
impulses will
have. The audience
will stay away in droves, and that will be the end of that, is my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
No one likes to be preached to.
There wouldn't be very much left to... there won't be very many stories left if you remove all of the less than honorable attributes of, you know, human behavior. I mean, they just won't be interesting. If everybody is a good guy and only performs well and always makes the right moral choice, there's not going to be drama anymore.
Steve, let me ask you, as producer, when you go to see a studio executive or, you know, a backer with money, what are the things they want to know about Henry? And
as possible.
Uh-huh. Like, what kind of reaction do you get from them about that? And do
the thing they want to talk about the most generally is how we only made it for $100,000, and it, you know, its return was so incredibly large compared to the initial investment. I think that more than anything, that's what they talk about. And we generally, when we walk into studio executives' offices, they tell us that they are the biggest fans of the film because it's the kind of film they can't make. It's not commercial.
So it hasn't stigmatized you in the industry?
No, not at all.
No, I don't think so.
Very little stigmatizes you in that industry.
I think
except stealing small. They frown on that. And getting caught.
I think it still doesn't hurt in that industry to be considered an artist. It doesn't necessarily mean they'll hire you, but they will look up to you for artistic achievement.
Have you ever seen a film that you thought went too far?
I don't really know what too far is exactly. It's hard to... I've seen films that were so incredibly bad that I thought that they went too far.
Badness.
But I don't think as far as... I mean, there's a film called The Killers by John Woo where it's a ballet of violence. And at the end of it, you're sort of laughing hysterically. And once again, I don't think you're saying, gee, I want to go out and do this on my block. But on the other hand... if you sat there and looked at it rationally, you'd go, this guy went way too far, which is sort of the joy of it.
Can you think of any films that you've seen that were very violent, but that reached you, that really spoke to you, that you thought were wonderful films?
The Wild Bunch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Say something about why.
Well, I mean, it's very much a man film. It's about that sort of camaraderie and these type of characters that their West was dying and their sort of code of honor that they had amongst themselves, you know, and they went out in a blaze of glory. But I just thought it's sort of a tremendous picture.
I also thought that for its time, Bonnie and Clyde, which was when they upped the level of graphic violence, it was something that hadn't been seen before. The Wild Bunch is a good example as well. And that initially had impact on everyone, saying, well, gee, now I can actually feel this violence a little more, and maybe it's not people shooting guns at each other with no repercussions, there's no blood, there's, you know, the person falls down the end. Menace to Society was something that really came out and grabbed me. More than anything, the kid who's shot and is sort of twitching in the street, there's no way a sane person could look at that and say, gee, this is really swell. You know, this is showing you what the effect of violence is on a human body, as opposed to, the cartoonish violence that you see in many pictures.
John McNaughton and Steve Jones collaborated on Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer and Mad Dog and Glory. This is Fresh Air. Walter Hill is a veteran action film director whose movies include The Warriors, 48 Hours, Streets of Fire, The Long Riders, Trespass, and now Geronimo. The Warriors landed him in the middle of the controversy over violence in film. This 1979 movie was about a street gang in New York fighting its way home through enemy turf. When the movie opened, there were two killings at theaters featuring the film. Many people assumed the movie inspired the violence, but Hill says one was a case of a jilted boyfriend. The other killing involved people who hadn't even seen the film. I asked Hill if he thought there was any connection between his movie and the deaths.
I think that night, that there was clearly a sad set of coincidences. I think that after the notion had been planted in everybody's mind that there were some fistfights and et cetera within certain theaters that maybe had to do with people attending the movie. I mean, but again, I think that it really had to do with people when they run into each other. Various gangs didn't like each other to begin with. They happened to run into each other in the theater and...
So do you think this has to do with the fact that movies about gangs tend to attract some gang members to the movies?
Well, yes. I think that's subsequently been shown. There have been many incidents on almost any film that had to do with gangs. And indeed now, I think was it Godfather 3 I think its opening night, two people were killed, people running into each other. And
no, one argument would go that... Even if the movies on the screen aren't directly responsible for the violence that breaks out in the theater or outside the theater, that the climate that those films help to create, that the world that those films show, is such a violent world that it encourages people to act out their violent feelings in reality. And I wonder if you think that that's a plausible argument. Do you feel that violent films encourage people to be violent or... excuse their violence in any way?
Well, I don't think there's, to my knowledge, and again, I'm not a social scientist, I don't think there's any compelling evidence to suggest that's true. But I think there's a much deeper philosophical argument,
mm-hmm.
and that is to say, let's say that it is true, let's say that somebody does go see a movie and draws the wrong, is simple-minded enough to draw the wrong conclusion and goes out and does some terrible thing. Clearly, this person will be statistically a tiny, 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 tiny minority of your audience. And are you going to change an art form based upon one person and their irresponsible actions? I mean, what is really clear, I mean, the thing that is statistically clear is that masses and masses of people go to these things and conduct quite normal lives afterwards. That's the overwhelming statistical truth.
We're in a climate now where the film and TV industry are being pressured by Congress and by the Attorney General to curb violence or else submit to some kind of government or industry restrictions. What do you think of that?
Well, I think very little of it. I think that it's unclear that you're going to, if you disarm Clint Eastwood or Arnold Schwarzenegger, that it's going to make the world a safer or better place. I think that it's clear that we have a terrible crime problem in this country, and I'm certainly support anything that we can do about it. But I think limiting the artistic imagination is probably not going to have any effect, short run or long run, other than as a detriment to our culture. But I don't want to defend other people's taste. There's a lot of directors that do things that I think are in bad taste, but at the same time, I don't know how you legislate against that.
Well, I wonder if you've been thinking about censorship or self-censorship. Do you think that this fear of new regulations or new code within the industry is leading towards self-censorship now?
Well, I think clearly what's going to happen is that...
And is that a good thing or a bad thing? Some people would argue that that's a good thing. It would mean that people are restraining themselves from putting in more violence than is healthy or decent.
Well, I think that it's, again, what the definition of healthy and decent is. One hopes that anybody that makes a living as an artist or in a certain creative way is always bound by a sense of the dramatically appropriate and good taste. But I just don't understand how you legislate that. And I think that when you think of the controversy surrounding... I mean, I suppose The Wild Bunch is the best example of this. Don't you really believe that the culture of the United States and indeed the world is better off because that film was made? And didn't it say a lot to a lot of people about certain issues that were very important in its time, I think remain important? And it would be, it will be the first kind of movie. This I promise you, it will be the first kind of movie that doesn't get made with the government getting involved.
What do you mean by that?
Well, it's going to be, as I say, the first victim. Those kinds of film. People.
Which kind of film?
Well, how do we define it? Okay, let me try to think of this. Films that show the savage and terrible consequences of violent acts, I think, are going to be, in a boldly graphic manner, will be the first victim.
So films that you think are ultimately about morality in some way will end up being the first victim?
Yeah, I think, again, the Wild Bunch, The Deer Hunter, et cetera, et cetera. Those are the films that we're really talking about, if not absolutely legislating out, will be pressured out of existence.
But do you think that those films about the true consequences of violence would be suppressed sooner than the more comic book action films, like RoboCop or Terminator?
Mm-hmm. They will, because they have a much slender financial base. I mean, they don't make money the way Terminator 2 or or what was the other one you said? RoboCop. They're just not. They're not on the same financial par, and therefore, there won't be the same resistance among the financiers. In regards to movies like The Wild Bunch or Deer Hunter.
Walter Hill, thank you very much for talking with us.
Sure.
Walter Hill's latest film is Geronimo,